thing.
I like it better than Andrew. Work for me.
Well, I have a seat. Thank you for your patience. We will now come out of recess and back into public hearing. Mr. Moore.
Yes, thank you. Now it is time for Mary Schreider Fox.
Oh, no. That's bad.
Good afternoon, members of council. For the record, my name is Mary Schreider Fox of Steenwhaler and Schreider Fox in Ocean View. And I'm here today on behalf of the Mass East Landing Homeowners Association in opposition to the application. The association is a fairly new organization and was just formed earlier this year, in fact. Its membership consists of the homeowners in Mass East Landing Park, which is the manufactured housing community comprised of approximately 100 homes located on a portion of the Fawcett family property. The homes are owned by the individual homeowners, but the land is leased, as is the case in a good number of the manufactured housing communities in the Long Neck area. As you can see from the many people that are here today, as well as from the various letters and the petition on file, there are a lot of very interested residents and homeowners who want to tell you their thoughts and comments about this project. Some of the folks here from Mass East Landing, but other communities, such as Potnets communities, have lent their support to this effort and will be assisting in a portion of our presentation. And speaking of that, we do have several speakers that we'd like to present following my comments to try to be a little bit more organized and hopefully not too repetitive for you. But before I ask them to come up, I do have a few introductory remarks. Beginning first with the rezoning application, as we have seen in other somewhat similar situations recently, the developer is asking for a downzoning from MR, medium density residential, to the AR1, agricultural residential designation. In such a situation, one might initially think downzoning is a good idea, because after all, it's a less intense zoning classification, and that means a less intense use. However, that is not the case here. The stated purpose of the downzoning is not for a permitted use in the AR1 zone, but rather for a resort RV park that requires conditional use approval. And it is our position, and some comments have already been exchanged earlier today in this regard, that the RV park is a more intense use than what's already been approved for the site, and I'm referring to the 120-unit residential project that was approved in 2007. So what we have here is 120 residential units already approved versus a commercial venture consisting of 322 RV sites, 10 tent sites, and according to the information on file, although it wasn't discussed specifically today, 45 to 55 employees that will be coming and going from the park. This looks, smells, and feels like a more intense use because it is. So the fact that the applicant is seeking a downzoning for a purpose not permitted and for a purpose that will be a more intense use of the land than what is normally permitted in an AR1 zone is very important and must be part of the decision-making process for this council when considering all aspects of the proposal, the rezoning piece as well as the conditional use piece. As the Court of Chancery in Orchard Homeowners Association versus County Council said, the rezoning applicant's proposed use of the property in question is highly relevant to the propriety of the rezoning decision in determining the appropriateness of the reclassification. Without a record as to how the applicant plans to use the property, the court is not able to determine whether or not the rezoning is acceptable under the comprehensive plan. Therefore, what the applicant wants to do with the subject property matters a lot, again, whether we're talking about the rezoning or the conditional use part. And I mention all of this because the primary objections that my clients have to the rezoning part of the application are based on the proposed use of the property. I've already mentioned one relevant case, but now I'll move on to the relevant statutory law. And this is something the council members are very familiar with, and that is Section 6904 of Title IX of the Delaware Code. And that is our guide when making a rezoning decision like this. Section 6904 makes it clear that zoning decisions shall be in accordance with the comp plan and shall be for the purpose of promoting the health, safety, morale, convenience, order, prosperity, or welfare of the present and future inhabitants of Sussex County. Some of the specific things that Section 6904 says must be considered are the lessening of congestion in the streets, protection of the tax base, securing safety from fire, flood, or other dangers. Section 6904 also states that reasonable consideration must be given to, among other things, the character of the particular district involved, the conservation of property values and natural resources, and the general and appropriate trend and character of land, building, and population development. The pending application does not pass muster under this Section 6904 for several reasons. Beginning first with the comp plan. The future land use map shows that the subject property is in a growth area. I agree with Mr. Fuqua. More specifically, it's in the environmentally sensitive developing area. This area does, in fact, function as an overlay to several underlying zoning districts, but, and that's what your comp plan says, but let's just focus on what does it mean to be in the environmentally sensitive developing area. The important question to ask is, even though it's in a growth area, what kind of growth is appropriate? Again, at first glance, one might think asking for the AR1 designation fits. That will work because it's an agricultural residential designation, generally low density. It would be kind to the environment. This is where the intended use of the property comes into play and why the court, in the Orchard Homeowners case I mentioned, said knowing the reason for the rezoning is so important. When we consider that the intended use of the subject property is for 322 RV sites, some of which will be the park model, cabins that have already been mentioned, 10 tent sites, a couple of large pavilions, thousands of square feet in size each, numerous other structures and amenities, a pool, bathhouses, cafes, rental centers, etc., we find that this project is not the kind of growth that the comp plan envisions for this particular area. According to the future land use element, in the environmentally sensitive developing areas, permitted uses set forth in the guidelines for future growth include a range of housing types, including single-family homes, townhouses, and multifamily units. Retail and office uses are also listed as being appropriate, and a careful mixture of light commercial or institutional uses that provide convenient services and that allow people to work close to home. If used for housing, the guidelines tell us that environmentally sensitive developing areas should allow 2 homes per acre, with an option to go up to 4 homes per acre if optional density bonuses are utilized by the developer. The pending application does not fit into any of the use categories just mentioned. This is not a residential project, because after all, there will not be any residents. It's a commercial enterprise, an RV resort park destination for transient vacationers and camping enthusiasts, but not any residents. The density of this project also falls out of step with the growth guidelines in the comp plan. Again, it's not a residential project, but the growth guidelines tell us that 2 to 4 homes per acre is appropriate. This project calls for 332 campsites, 322 RV plus the 10 tent sites, on a total of 50.83 acres. That is a density of about 6.5 campsites per acre when considering the entire size of the site. If we just consider what the developer has designated as the 17.63 acre campground portion, again, that's listed in the materials that you have on file from the developer, and that is the portion of the site that excludes buffers, paved streets, and federal wetlands, we are talking about approximately 18.8 campsites per acre. This is not an apple-to-apple comparison, obviously, because the project does not fit into any of the use categories, specifically the residential category contemplated by the comp plan guideline. However, this does give us an idea of the true intensity of the project. Lastly, with regard to the goods and services being provided in the RV park, as required by the conditional use ordinance, any goods and services being provided within the park are being offered for the convenience of the park guests and not for the general public in the surrounding neighborhood. This is another deviation from the guidelines of the comp plan, The goods and services are not for the convenience of the nearby residents. They do not allow people to work close to home, nor are they retail or office uses. These are all very important points to consider because, as Mr. Fuquay already mentioned, the future land use element of the comp plan states that it is probably the most influential part of the comp plan and that the county's zoning regulations are intended to carry out the comp plan. And although the guidelines in the future land use element are not meant to be inflexible, again, they're guidelines, as the Court of Chancery said in O'Neill versus Middletown, quote, the legislature's mandate that comprehensive plans are to carry the force of law militates against analysis so flexible as to render such plans a nullity, end quote. The developer's reliance on the more generalized goals of promoting tourism without consideration of the more specific goals and guidelines set forth in the portion of the comp plan specific to the environmentally sensitive developing area would render these more specific goals and guidelines a nullity, and we shouldn't let that happen. Compliance with the comp plan is not the only hurdle for the developer. It also has a problem with other requirements of state law when we take into consideration the proposed use of the property. Two of the most important things to consider are the character of the particular district involved and the general and appropriate trend and character of land, building, and population development in the surrounding area. As you can see from the maps, and has already been said earlier today, the vast majority of the surrounding area is residential in nature, with numerous manufactured home communities. Some of these homes have existed for quite some time, again, something else that's already been pointed out, and some are the result of more recent development trends. Again, the proposal before you is not residential in nature. It's a commercial venture designed to attract transient vacationing guests for business purposes, but not to create homes. It's not part of the development trend of this particular area. We run into additional problems when considering the promotion of health, safety, morale, convenience, order, prosperity, and welfare of the present and future inhabitants of Sussex County. A typical definition of an inhabitant, according to Merriam-Webster's online dictionary, is one that occupies a particular place regularly or routinely. A typical synonym of inhabitant, according to the same source, is resident. In this instance, when considering the well-being of the present residents in the immediately surrounding area, the pending application is worrisome. As the letters on file in the record tell you, they are worried about their safety because of the already terrible traffic problem on Long Neck Road, both in terms of backups and shoulder room. The letters tell you that they're worried about their prosperity and how this kind of commercial venture located so nearby might affect their ability to sell their homes. In the case of the residents of Massey's Landing Park, according to the preliminary site plan, RVs will be parked less than 100 feet away from some of those homes in certain instances, approximately 50 feet. The same is true for some of the residents in the Potnets communities adjacent to the subject property. The letters tell you that they're worried about their safety, health, and welfare in terms of the ability to evacuate. It's an area that floods too often, as is true for many of the areas in Sussex County in recent years. The letters tell you that they're worried about their health and safety in terms of the emergency vehicles being able to reach them, which is already a problem at times along Long Neck Road, and it is a problem that will be greatly exacerbated by large RV vehicles coming and going. Again, all of these worries are set forth in the letters on file, and some of the folks will be here speaking about those same things in a few moments and further elaborate on those points. And what you'll read in the letters and what you'll hear from those who speak today is that while the pending application may be a good idea for residents of other parts of the state or of the country who want to come visit Sussex County, the inhabitants, our residents, who are already here, disagree. Tourism is important. That's been pointed out by the developer. But the well-being and safety of our inhabitants, our residents, cannot take a back seat to tourism and the promotion thereof alone. The comp plan tells us that we have to consider tourism. That's true. But it also tells us, and so does state law in no uncertain terms, that we also have to consider the residents and their well-being. And what the residents who are here today, what they have to say does have meaning. It is important. as the court in Eastlake Partners versus City of Dover Planning Commission stated, the desires of the public in respect to uses are pertinent to the zoning of land when the initial uses for land are established. And that's citing Sears versus Levy Court of Kent County, which was a decision rendered by Vice Chancellor Berger, now Justice Berger of the Supreme Court. So what these residents have to say about the living conditions and what they experience along Long Neck Road is important. And that leads into one of their most important concerns that they have, the greatest cause of worry, perhaps, and that is the traffic congestion. And there's been a lot of discussion about that. The statutory requirement is that consideration be given to the lessening of congestion in the streets. And again, there's been mention about the age of the traffic impact study that's on file, and I certainly am not qualified to pick that study apart for you, but the age, it being 8 years old, is a concern. And according to its comments and according to what you've heard today, DLDOT has come to the conclusion that conditions haven't changed much since 2005 or that they accounted for enough conditions in that initial study. But the letters of protest on file and some of the people here today will tell you differently based on their own personal experience, not based on a study. They're going to tell you what it's like to be on Long Neck these days and what the traffic is like and what they experience during the summer months. You're allowed to consider that. We also have an engineer who's here today who will be speaking about the traffic impact study, Mr. Steve Rain from Kirscher Engineering. He's been retained by the association that I represent to speak to you about the traffic issues in the DLDOT report. And we hope that after you hear from both the residents who are going to talk about the traffic issues and Mr. Rain, that the personal observations and his opinion will give the council serious food for thought when you're reviewing the various studies and other materials on file and when determining whether or not they are adequate for purposes of this rezoning and conditional use project. It's true, DLDOT may get to grant the entrance permit, and the council is required to consider DLDOT's input about the traffic, the effect of the traffic, and what they think about the 8-year-old traffic impact study. But this county council is the entity charged with making the final decision. DLDOT's opinion about the traffic is just one thing that you have to consider. You're allowed to look at other sources to find out relevant information about the traffic, and that's what we hope to present to you in the next few minutes. So far, I've focused on the rezoning piece, but really all of these concerns relate to the conditional use part of the application as well, and I certainly won't repeat them, except just to emphasize that all of the points already made should be considered when considering both applications. Now, having said that, there is one set of considerations that's different from the rezoning part of the application, and that's specific to the conditional use piece. And those are, of course, your conditional use ordinances. Section 115-171 of the Sussex County Code states that conditional uses are to be, quote, essential and desirable for the general convenience and welfare, end quote. For all the reasons already stated, it's our position that this project is for the convenience and welfare of people from other places, but not for your residents of Sussex County and specifically those living along Long Neck Road. In addition to Section 115-171, you also have to look at the special requirements set forth in Section 115-172H. That's specific to campgrounds. In subparagraph 4, it states that each campsite must be at least 2,000 square feet in size and have a width of at least 40 feet. According to the preliminary site plan on record, there are 10 sites proposed that will be half of the required size, and that is a deviation from your conditional use requirements. In subparagraph 3, it states that every area of the campground shall be at least 400 feet from any existing dwelling on property of other ownership. That's already been mentioned today, and it got a lot of attention at the Planning and Zoning Commission hearing as well. Specifically, that the definition of dwelling excludes manufactured homes. And while it is true that the 400-foot requirement in Section 115-172H appears to be satisfied, when you're considering the straight-up definition of dwelling in your code and that it's not violated by the application, where the RV resort borders along Potnets and some of the Massey's Landing homes in the Massey's Landing Park, the end result is troubling from a practical perspective when thinking about the intent of the zoning code. The inclusion of the 400-foot requirement obviously had a purpose, and we suggest that that purpose is to keep campgrounds an adequate distance from the places where people live, eat, sleep, raise their families. And although the basic definition of dwelling in the zoning code does exclude manufactured homes, this council should not ignore the fact that vacationing RVers, some of whom will be well-behaved and peaceful folks, I'm sure, some of whom will not be, I'm sure. You can't control human behavior. But in some cases, they will be about 50 feet or so away from Sussex County residents and the homes that they occupy. Just because the basic definition of dwelling excludes manufactured homes does not make said homes any less important or any less residential in nature or any less of a dwelling, at least from the occupant's perspective. And in fact, I don't think the issue is quite as clear-cut as perhaps we all initially thought. The definitions in the zoning code themselves have some contradictions. Dwelling excludes manufactured homes, or the definition of dwelling excludes manufactured homes. But then when we look in the zoning code at the definition of manufactured home, it is defined as being a type of dwelling. The word dwelling is used within the definition of manufactured home that's excluded from the definition of dwelling. Again, it's a little confusing and may present a contradiction that the council should think about. The same is true for the definition of manufactured home park, which also describes such parks as being used for manufactured homes occupied as dwellings. And in other numerous places throughout the code, manufactured homes are either discussed in terms of being used as dwellings or actually included in the definition of dwelling, like in the housing standards. Now, all of that said, I understand we're stuck with the definition in the zoning code and not in other places of the Sussex County Code. But if nothing else, all of this goes to show that the spirit of the zoning code is not being honored when we have RV campsites approximately 50 feet away from someone's home. And it also goes to show that the character of the district is not appropriate for this RV resort use. Again, one of the very important factors that we're supposed to consider. We tell people they can have this type of housing. The comp plan specifically encourages it as affordable housing, particularly in the eastern part of the county. But then we ignore the residential status of those neighborhoods and pretend that parking an RV practically in someone's backyard or very close to it doesn't matter. Again, the spirit of the zoning code and all of the other restrictions in various places in the code that are put in place to protect and buffer residential communities from other non-residential uses do not support a conclusion that these residential homes don't matter. The RV sites are just too close to the residential neighbors. And lastly, while there is no particular subparagraph to point to, and this is something Mr. Fuqua mentioned in his comments and said there's absolutely no common sense basis for it, but I argue it's not an issue of common sense, but a matter of the proper interpretation of your code. The absence of subparagraphs about recreational uses and some of the uses proposed as elements of this plan, not all of the uses, but some of them, that it's our position that some of those may not be in strict conformance with the requirements of Section 115-172H. You've already heard the list of different amenities. Some of them can certainly be characterized as retail or service-oriented in nature, like the concierge or the golf cart rental. But many are recreational or marina in nature, the boating and the various activities. And while Section 115-172H specifically permits the existence of the small retail business, such as a grocery store, laundromat, those are the examples given, It's silent with respect to these other types of facilities. In other conditional use situations in 115-172, recreational space and facilities are specifically talked about. They're specifically permitted and provided for. In the mobile home park context, for example, which is in subparagraph G of 115-172, recreational land is specifically stated it should be set aside. And as well as the small retail businesses, using language that's either exactly the same or substantially similar to that used for the campgrounds. They're both specifically permitted. In swimming or tennis club context, outdoor recreational facilities are also specifically permitted. I submit that this type of project, like others recently proposed, might simply be beyond the scope of what was contemplated by Section 115-172H when it was passed. And it's important to remember that according to Section 115-15 of the Zoning Code, quote, unless the contrary is clear from the context of the list of permitted uses, is what it's referring to, or other regulations of this chapter, uses not specifically listed are prohibited. So again, I understand that Mr. Fuqua may think that this isn't a common sense argument, but I think it's an important one to consider with respect to what did the county council, as it existed at the time that this particular subparagraph was passed, what did it intend? And also to take into consideration Section 115-15 about if it's not specifically permitted, then it's prohibited. So with all of this said, and for the reasons stated so far, we hope that the county council will ultimately deny this application. When it's finally all said and done and you have P&Z's recommendation before you, I want to thank you, as always, for listening and considering these comments. And at this point, unless absent any objection from the council, I'd like to ask the next presenter in my group to come forward.
Please.
The next presenter will be Mr. Jeff Marks. He is the vice president of the Massey's Landing Homeowners Association.
Ms. Fox.
Yes, sir.
Very good presentation. Do you have those written comments?
I've scribbled on them a bit, but I will clean them up and I will email them to Mr. Lang.
Sure. I was going to suggest at the end of the hearing, because Mr. Fuqua made some remarks concerning the statutory authority as well, that part of keeping the record open would be for the purpose of getting a memo from each of the council, mm-hmm. short memo.
Mm-hmm. Certainly.
Hi, good afternoon. If you just give me one moment here, I'll get this presentation up.
You have a copy of that available for you?
Yes, I do, and I will give you a copy for the record.
So, as Mary had mentioned, my name is Jeff Marks, and I have a residence in Massey's Landing. I'm a resident of Newark, Delaware. I've been coming to Massey's Landing for 42 years, so I have a long family history of having a place there. And my background, I've been 22 years in analytics and risk management. I have a master's degree with a finance concentration, which will be important to some of the slides that we'll see here in a minute. So why are we here? We are not here today to oppose the development of the property. We're supportive of the development of the property in accordance with the current zoning as recommended in the Sussex County Comprehensive Plan. We're here to represent the communities of Long Neck Road, We're here to protect the safety, tax base, and quality of life of the residents of Long Neck. We're here to recognize the appropriate buffers as required by Chapter 115, a conditional use section. So first, some interesting facts that are relevant. So if you look at the Sussex County Economic Development Office, I think it's interesting the growth that Long Neck Road has seen. The rest of Sussex County from 2000 and 2010 had 25.9% growth. But Long Neck Road was at 55%, so really some explosive growth. And that's important to keep in mind when we talk about people forecasting, right? I'm in that business. So do you forecast for that type of explosive growth? The answer is usually not. Long Neck Road is the sixth largest municipality in housing for Sussex, and the average age is 62 years old.
My kind of people.
Mine too. I'm
62.
So this has been talked about a lot. We've heard several comments on both sides with regard to this future land use plan. And I could blow this up, but the fact is, I'm sure you're familiar with it, and Massey's Landing sits on that peninsula there in the middle of the bays. And, you know, you would see if I blew this up that, A, it's an environmentally sensitive area, and it's also designated as low density. And this is the future land use plan. So I'm not going to waste a lot of time here this afternoon. The investment levels were also referenced by Mr. Fuquay, and it is in investment level 3. And what I would hope is that if it was a growth area, that we would either A, change the investment level, or B, have the developer invest in the appropriate infrastructure around a growth area. So I think this map is important when we talk about that space. So the downzoning. So we're downzoning here from MR to AR1, and it's not aligned with the comprehensive plan future land use map, which you just saw. And we are downzoning for the sole purpose to designate it as conditional use. So can we afford it? You know, that's a question I think is important. And I know in other projects that there's been impact studies. So I took the liberty to produce one of those impact studies off the data that was out there that was produced by the county for the Bethany project. It was very simple to derive the appropriate relationships. And as you know, a lot of the information with regard to sewer hookups and such is out there in public, and you'll see that in a minute, and I'll present the impact that this project will have on the county. So it will not generate the realty transfer tax. It will create a drain on the county and the taxpayer. It gets back to infrastructure and resources. But let's talk about jobs for a minute. What type of jobs will the RV campground create versus building a residential development? In my experience, if you're building a residential development, it takes a couple years. And then post the development, these are people's vacation homes or residences. There's folks there cutting the grass. There's contractors in doing additions. So really good, solid jobs, not minimum wage types of jobs, jobs that are going to allow the community to thrive and increase your tax base. With the RV campground, there are jobs that are created. Let's not say that there are not. But I do want you to be aware that in planning and zoning, we heard about, well, it's going to add jobs to the community. I do want you to be aware that Castaways does have a program. It's called Work Campers. So these people come to the campsite and they work. I believe it's 20 hours if it's a spouse, so the husband and wife or significant other or domestic partner can work 20 hours apiece. Or if you're an individual, you work 30 hours a week and that pays for your space. And I think that's important when you consider, okay, jobs are coming. I ask two questions: what kind of jobs and what real job ads are there? Because it'll obviously be supplemented through this other program. So it gets to the next bullet. Is this proposed plan and downzoning a win for the community? Or does it just benefit a select few? And what will it do to the character of the area? Here's the impact study as submitted. As you can see, the annual revenue impact to the county, as is, I was conservative here. I used, I really skewed it towards the RV park, the proposed park. And it's $96,000 a year annual revenue it'll cost the county. And the one-time revenue impact will be $189,000. So it does have impact. And it makes sense if you look at it and you see the realty transfer tax. I mean, that's really where the win is. And this 2007 plan, let me go back. This is with the 130, the proposal of 130 EDUs, which 75 were townhomes and 55 were single family. And I considered the four homes per acre, took the average square foot of a square acre, divided it up by four to make sure that we are conservative and not overshooting what these numbers would look like. So there's this conversation around the buffers and dwellings, and why is this important? It's very important because it changes the financial impacts. If the buffers are appreciated and dwellings are appreciated as the place where someone lives, it changes the submitted plan. And this is an estimate, and it does not consider the 400 foot from the currently Fawcett-owned property. These circles are drawn from the Potnets properties, tunnels properties. So it would significantly change the plan. And that's why dwelling is so important in this conversation. So we've heard that the definition is inconsistent and that it does not consider or include manufactured homes in Section 115. But I've spent many hours reviewing the planning and zoning code for a couple reasons. One is I could see that there's a real conscious effort to do away with this term of mobile home. And I can see where the conscious effort was made to redefine mobile home as part of that manufactured home definition. What I can't find is any crisp reason as to why it's different in Chapter 115 of the zoning code. And with that in mind, it does raise a concern, or does it raise a concern of equal protection? You know, I think that's a question. Again, these residents are 62 years old, and owning a mobile home is not a protected class, but age is. So I ask that question, because as you know, intent need not be there. So now let's look at the impact. Approximately 100, this can change, and I'd be happy if you have any questions or want to do the math any differently. We could actually pull it up and do it here, but I'm sure no one's interested in doing it right now. But this is the difference. It changes it significantly when you drop the number of EDUs with the buffers. It drops it. If you dropped it 100 down to 232, it's then $146,000 a year that it would cost the county, and $575,000 in the one-time impact. So the floodplain. This is the map in the comprehensive plan. Does it make sense to put this RV park in a floodplain? This area is prone to flooding, and it's often cut off by coastal storms. And I'm telling you that, but I'm going to give you some perspective. I've got some pictures here that we're going to page through. The rest of this presentation is going to give you some type of perspective of what you'll hear many of the residents speak about this afternoon. So here's Long Neck Road flooded. This is maybe a half mile up from where the entrances are being proposed. As you can see, there's no way in, so if we don't get people out, how are you going to get in? There's salt marsh on each side. And a lot of the Long Neck Road, as you travel Long Neck Road, you'll find that the shoulders are unforgiving. And there's no way out. So, you know, we would hope that we got people out of there, but what happens if you're trying to get all these folks out of this RV park? So we heard, I believe it was Mike say, the majority of it's 8-foot lanes. And there's no doubt that some of it is 8-foot lanes. But if you take the measurements, there's less 8-foot than there is smaller measurements. And I'm going to give you some perspective on that. That's southbound. That's probably looking maybe a quarter of a mile down the road. There's northbound up the road. How narrow is this? That rock's important, just so you know. We're not changing in here. 5'10". So imagine this. Imagine pulling off the side of the road. It's 5'10". We heard there's no impact to people that jog and walk and go up and down this road. And now you're going to put this 8-foot vehicle that's going to stick out 3 feet into the road. I think that's significant. Here's perspective. This is just my truck. I figured I'd take it 6'2", trying to get over on the shoulder of the road. And this is actually one of my favorite slides. This is a state or emergency vehicle. If you look to the right, this is the planning and zoning sign. And, you know, they're coming from an emergency at the boat ramp. This is an RV. He's already responded to the emergency. And these are the people I'm worried about, right? So we know that, we were told that people don't drive up and down in the RVs, up and down along that road. Once they come, they stay, they take the bus. But on the way in and the way out, are we going to increase this type of behavior? And if we do, what type of additional risk does that pose? So these are the evacuations we get today when we have those unfortunate events of hurricanes. If you're looking at natural disasters, if you want some data, you can go on citydata.com. Citydata.com will tell you we have no less natural disasters in this county than we do in the rest of the United States. So it's not, you know, I don't want to underplay that. And, you know, there's a lot of nor'easters where you'll actually find that the roads are closed off without it being declared a FEMA event, right? So here's the park models. There were some pictures passed around. Again, I won't spend a bunch of time here, but here's some two-story park models that are available. This is Bayshore. I guess they didn't get this one out of there. But, you know, there's you know, moving these things, you know, with the amount of water I'm going to show you, even if they're put in the center of the lot, you know, if we have a major storm, I guess the question is, do they float? But, you know, there is significant damage here. And again, what does this damage cost? So who cleans this up if one of these floats in the ditch? Because this is right on a tidal ditch. It's very swift. What type of additional cost may that pose the county if we do have one of these events and we're not successful in getting people out? So here's Matthew's that during Hurricane Sandy. That's actually my parents' house there to the left. You can see that deck's probably 2.5 feet off the ground, and it's a pretty good flood there. So we get a bunch of water. I mean, it's not, you know, it's not a trickle. We get tons of water when we do have storms and nor'easters. That's Potnets, just some more perspective. So moving on to the traffic impact study. Now we have Steve Rain here for Kircher Engineering. So in appreciation of your time, I'm not gonna spend a long time on this slide, but I read this study from front to back. And again, I questioned whether they understood this was the fastest growing municipality when they did the planning and forecasting. Usually forecasts are lagging and leading regardless of what business you're in. And I think that should be questioned. And we get to the question of why wouldn't we require a new traffic impact study? Are we willing to put the safety of the folks here on Long Neck Road at risk because we don't want to spend the money? I mean, what is the real reason that we don't want to get that impact study done? So here's the state boat ramp. This is, you heard a little bit about this. It holds 80 parking spots with trucks and trailers, 20 other parking spots for vehicles without trailers. So I was curious, so I talked to Rob Gannot at Asselwoman Wildlife Area and said, Rob, what's the plan here? You know, we know this thing's proposed. And his comments to me were, we don't know. These trucks here will be parked right in front of where the proposed RV park is on the right, and they actually come up the road actually half a mile at times. So holiday weekends are worse, but this is an average summer weekend. And it's a really popular place, and people use it. So this plan must be denied. The proposal is to place an RV park on a road that's in a floodplain when there's one way in and one way out. There are currently over 4,500 RV sites available for RVs within the area. The downzoning from MR to AR is in direct conflict with the future land use map and comprehensive plan, and it doesn't improve the character of the area. The revenue impact to Sussex County due to the loss of the realty and property taxes. And then we have the job situation that we talked about. We're relying on an 8-year-old study, proposing a plan without the appropriate buffers as required for conditional use. We talked about the dwelling piece. Having no understanding or plan to the current boat ramp, I'd hope we deal with that before we put this in and had to deal with a problem that we knew about ahead of time. And we're putting the current residents and emergency response teams of Long Neck at risk in the event of an evacuation. So I'd like to thank you for your time this afternoon. I'd be happy to share any of this. I'm going to submit this for the record. Mr. Lang?
Please. Yes, and some of the subjects we hit were the flooding, economic impact, the buffers. I do know you had a traffic expert that was going, you said you were going to have testify.
That's correct. Thank
you. Yes, at this point, I'd like to introduce Mr. Steve Rain. He's a traffic engineer from Kirscher Engineering.
Provided all the council members with a copy of Mr. Rain's correspondence already. And have a copy available for the
Farming
way too, if he desires one.
Good afternoon, members of council. My name is Steve Rain. For the record, I'm currently employed by Kirscher Engineering as project engineer. Been in the private sector since 2002. Prior to that, I worked for the Department of Transportation and retired after 32 years. I worked in the subdivision section. Earlier years, I reviewed land use plans in Kent, Sussex, or worked with Lawrence in those early years. And when I retired, I was the subdivision manager for Newcastle County. With that, we were hired or retained by the Homeowners Association to look at the traffic study, to look at the files, the information, and DLDOT's letter. In so doing, I'd like to point out a couple of facts, findings, and things that hopefully that maybe you would consider in considering these applications. The first thing, which has been brought out several times, we have, I have reviewed DLDOT's January 28th letter, where it's been said before that there hasn't been significant changes in the area, so therefore they weren't requiring a new traffic impact study. going on their own website and looking at the traffic study. The study was done, the counts were taken in 2004. The study was presented in 2005. So I looked at the 2004 traffic summary counts. DLDOT does a traffic summary counts every year on the roads. They don't necessarily count the roads every year, but if they don't count the roads every year, they factor up the numbers to what they think they should be for that year that they put out the traffic summary. I have attached as part of the letter and part of the record the 2004 traffic summary for Long Neck Road, and you will see that it shows that the counts for the 2004 were 7,786 average annual daily trips on that road in 2004. In 2012, which is, they're always a year behind, so the latest summary for that the engineers use when doing traffic impact studies would use 2012 counts, just as a reference for the ADT. If you look at the 2012 traffic summary, it will show you that the AADT, average annual daily traffic, has increased by 11,000, or the new AADT is 11,439 vehicles, which if you do some math, it's basically an increase of about 47% higher. Now, traffic impact studies are done for peak hours. So the reason I point this out, the peak hours are usually representative of what the current AADT is. And usually you're looking at about 10% of the average annual daily traffic. So there is quite a significant increase. Also, I was looking at the Planning and Zoning Commission minutes for the May 23rd hearing. And in that, the representatives of the applicants had made a statement that basically says that based on DLDOT's criteria, single-family units generate approximately 10 trips per day, which is true. That comes right from the Institute of Traffic Engineers. That's the average for residential families. And RV sites have a 20% reduction compared to a single-family unit. So if you do some simple math, the original site plan was for 120, or approved plan was for 120 dwelling units, which is 1,200 trips per day. And with 322 sites, camping sites, if you do a 20% reduction, that's 8 trips per site. That comes out to 2,576, which is, the way I see it, more than 100% increase in daily traffic. So, I think, it's, at least in our professional opinion, that there is a significant change in traffic and traffic volumes along the road. also, the 2005 TIS analyzes intersections within the study area based on, and the build-out year for that study was 2009. And that's when they said everything would be built out. Well, we've passed that. We're now 2013, and the RV park is proposed to be open in 2014. Well, as Mr. Quay pointed out, there were 11 committed developments, and to date, we don't really know what has been developed and what hasn't been developed. But certainly the cases evaluated under a new study would look at 2014 numbers. And the old study only goes to 2009. So I think if you did a new study, it would show some things that maybe the old study doesn't show. And there may be some capacity issues and operational issues that are not presented in the original study that should be looked at and considered. Also, the 2005 study showed a distribution of all traffic must come and go up Long Neck Road and must pass the intersection of 24. Ironically, the 2005 study only went to Banks Road. Road and School Lane and the intersection with Long Neck Road. So it's just short of the Route 24 intersection. But if you look at, in looking at the traffic distribution, it had 85% of the traffic going straight through that intersection towards 24, which most of the traffic has to either come from Route 1 down 5 or from 24 north and south. So in our opinion, the study should have really gone to 24 because there are known issues at that intersection. And it should take into consideration, especially with the type of trips that would be generated by the RV park. If you compare the trips with the what was looked at in the 2005 study, you're talking mostly vehicular traffic. Now we're talking that these trips generated by the RV park would be from much larger vehicles, either trailering a car behind them because they're a big motorhome, or trailering their trailer or their camper for the to go to the site. That in itself has an impact not only on the capacity but the operational aspects of these intersections that are within the study area and along Long Neck Road. They're much larger vehicles. Some of the radiuses at these intersections are tight due to right-of-way restrictions. In most of the bigger intersections, there are no shoulders because there's not enough right-of-way to provide those shoulders where they should be provided. Turning radiuses are shorter. And given the larger vehicles, you have to look at the operation and whether you have adequate storage for queuing of vehicles during the signal cycles. Once they back up and then they start blocking off the different lanes, then it builds right into a capacity problem because now you don't have enough storage in each of the lanes for the different type of turning movements. So, that's one thing that should be looked at in addition. So the operational aspects and the capacity aspect. The last thing is the boat landing, Massey's boat landing. If I have attached with that letter a Google Earth map that I got, and it was dated, even though it's not shown on there, if you pull up Google Earth, it'll show the date when that aerial was taken, and that was July 3rd, 2011. As you can see, all the spaces were filled, and there were trailers parked. I know it's difficult, but it's there. And all the there are several trailers parked in the area where the RV park will have its entrances, which is another issue that just needs to be looked at from the standpoint of safety. Where are these people going to park if they continue to park there? Will it be a safety issue? Will there be some site distance issues that will cause accidents or potential accidents? So that should be considered too. Basically, in closing, I'm just bringing out these facts and points for the council to consider that a new study should be done. The residents of Sussex County shouldn't have to pay for these improvements in the future because it wasn't looked at properly during the time that the conditional use and zoning change was considered, and that a new study should be done, and if there are any additional improvements that need to be done based on the new counts and the change in the trip generation, then the developer should be responsible for that. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
The last speaker from our organized group is Mr. William Higgins, and he is the president of Potnets Coveside, Dockside, and Seaside Communities.
All three.
And before I start, let me mention I've cut it down to 12 pages.
The Reader's Digest version.
Good afternoon, folks. My name is Bill Higgins, and I'm president of the Homeowners Association for Potnets Dockside, Coveside, and Seaside, which consists of 500 residences. The northern and southern side of Dockside and Seaside borders within 50 feet of the proposed Castaways RV Park. I'm a retired police lieutenant and a career fire chief consisting of 175 personnel. During these 40 years of public safety, I've done impact studies for police, fire, and EMS response for several local governments. I have worked closely with Sussex and Wicomico County code enforcement officers and planning and zoning. First, I would like to say I'm not against RV parks. I have a travel trailer. This project has so many issues that affect the life, safety, and welfare of not only the residences and the businesses on Long Neck Road, but the 322 guests and families of the proposed Castaways Massey Landing project. Perhaps some of you have never been down Long Neck Road. Long Neck Road is 5 miles long, a dead end which ends at Massey's Landing, and adjacent to the proposed 322 RV Castaways. So whatever goes down to the dead end has to turn around and return at some point in time the same way. As some lady told me the other day, tell them people in Georgetown we ain't got no back door to get out. So I thought I'd share that with you. On a summer holiday, there are over 10,000 people on Long Neck Road. That's more than most towns in Sussex County. Long Neck starts at the intersection with Route 24. During a summer holiday, according to the Delaware State Police, over 100,000 cars pass through this intersection. Do we have much crime? You bet, according to Delaware State Police, from May the 14th till June the 10th of this year, the following incidents were reported to them. And this is the area from Farm Road to Long Neck Road and Banks Road and on down up to 24. They had 116 major and violent crimes reported. This consists of murder, rape, robbery, sex crimes, and so forth. They had reported 10 drug complaints consisting of heroin, marijuana, and so forth. And there were 33 property reports, which were larceny, shoplifting, and minor things. In 2005, we did not contest the building of townhomes for which is presently zoned for. For some reason, the project failed. It's a shame because it would blend in with the other townhomes on Long Neck Road. Next, please. Okay, it would blend in. It's the ideal spot for townhomes, not RVs. This shows some of the other townhomes scattered up and down Long Neck Road. Also, townhomes pay taxes, RVers do not. Then there was a discussion brought up a while ago, there's not a demand for these. There's probably 10 of these on Long Neck Road of these sites, and every one of them are just about filled. So there is a demand for more. Next, I would like to show you some serious life safety issues should this project be approved. As we travel down the road, we have Long Neck Elementary School, which is just right next to Long Neck Road, with 800 students. I took this picture last Friday at 3 p.m. for dismissal. So that is certainly an impact with our kids. Next. Is that all of the buses? Nope. Here's a picture of one of three Sussex Central High School buses unloading students in Seaside, which borders with the RV project. Let's talk about the traffic problem that we now have and the serious accidents. Last year, according to the Delaware State Police, there were 103 accidents on Long Neck Road. That amounts to one every 3 days. Of the 103, 30 were PI, which is personal injury, one fatal, and the rest property damage. Some of these accidents closed the road down completely for over 2 hours. If someone had a heart attack or there was a water rescue in Rehoboth Bay or Indian River, they're out of luck. Next. Long Neck Road has been closed down completely 3 times this year. This picture is a 4-car personal injury accident on January the 18th of this year, head-on collision near what we call Dead Man's Curve. There was 4 injured. The road closed completely for 1.5 hours. Next. On April the 5th this year, head-on collision, 2 injured, road closed completely for 1.5 hours. Next. And this last picture is a rollover with entrapment. This was at the entrance to Massey's Landing and in front of the proposed RV park. No further information whether he lived or died. I would like to talk about flooding and evacuations. I have resided in Dockside for 46 years and been in 4 evacuations. The road is prone to severe flooding, and there is no escape route except by chopper or by the Delaware National Guards. First problem area is Dowdy's. Yeah, okay. That is Dowdy's Marina, which is on Long Neck Road. It shows the RVs there. And coming out this way is the roadway. And this is how it looked last Saturday. Next. This is how it looked at a recent northeasterner. Note the pontoon floating down, and the road is right in front of the building, and it's completely closed. You cannot get through. Okay, next. This is the entrance to Dockside where I live. During the sandy storm. Note the pontoon floating down the road. And the wooded area, on the other side of the wooded area, is where the proposed RV park would be, on the other side of that woods. Next. This is Massey's Landing State Marina Park during the sandy storm. The right side are presently mobile homes, which were omitted from this last project. The left side starts the side of the proposed RV. That is Massey's Ditch at the far end, and it's also called the Inland Waterway, believe it or not, as shallow as it is. Okay. Next. This is Long Neck Road between Potnets Dockside and Potnets Cove Side right after the Hurricane Sandy. There's 1.5 feet of water on the road there. Cannot get through. And I believe this, no, okay, I won't say it because I'm not sure. Next one. Yeah, there you go. This is a lagoon in Seaside during the sandy storm, and it's next to Massey's Landing, and Massey's Landing is just on the far side of that, the part that separates with a fence. Next. Next, they propose to rent golf cars. Will there be an age requirement? You can be arrested for entering a public highway. Will they be running up and down Long Neck Road and visiting other parks? You bet. This picture was taken last Saturday. These people do not live in Dockside. They're coming out. The guy with the jet ski has just loaded up from our spot down there. He lives a couple miles down the road, and he's going to pull that with a golf car back to his place down the road. Hey, and it isn't just the kids. The older folks are worse. Those, on the highway.
Those 62-year-old guys.
Yeah, right. Sorry, Mr. President.
You're referring to people younger than you.
Next. Okay, now this, I don't know how that spot got on there. This is what they talked about earlier, where they proposed enlarge an uninhabited beach. And I've been there 46 years, and the only thing I've ever seen is a couple wooden lawn chairs sitting out there, but never anybody there. Facing Masters Ditch, which is the inland waterway, think of the persons who will be swept away by the strong, swift current. As the attorney said at the planning and zoning meeting, the current is swift in Masters Ditch. The right side of the picture is where the unsafe and unprotected lagoons are located. Do they plan to rent canoes? Will they be required to provide life safety vests? Will they be required to pay DNR thousands of dollars for use of the waterfront as tunnel does? I guess what I'm saying is, would you want your children in canoes in Burton's Palm, Indian River Inlet, and Rehoboth Bay? Think of all the canoes that will be capsized and lives lost. Take a look on a weekend, observe all the boat and jet ski traffic and the wake that they create. The last thing is evacuations. Planning and zoning requires that they post information on boards. It's very generic. How many people will read it? They are here for fun and games. It must be on three local radio stations and announce the evacuation on PAs. What if they are in town for the day? Everyone will wait till the last minute to leave. Imagine the 10,000 residents on Long Neck Road leaving the same time. The formula for an RV is three persons per unit. With the employees, that figures 1,000 persons, plus their vehicles, RVs, and boat. The map shows the property of approximately 50 acres. I believe that's what it had on there. It might be 50.2 or whatever. Well, I'll say approximately 50 acres. Approximately 25 acres can be used because it is wetlands. So that leaves 25 acres. I believe this means that only 25 acres can be occupied. In this usable area, you have bathhouses, swimming pools, RVs, tent area, bus stop, maintenance area, 10-foot wide roads. If the park was full with 1,000 persons, that would mean, with all these other objects, you would have 1,000 persons in 25 acres. That's a mess of people in 25 acres. Okay, some other notes I have here as they were speaking. Then castaways mentioned it would bring growth. Please tell me how seasonal 180 days is going to bring growth to Long Neck. I call your attention to the article in the Cape Gazette on June the 7th. It says there are now 4,200 RV sites in Sussex County. There are at least 15 RV campgrounds in Sussex. Five of these are now on Long Neck Road. I have met with most of the managers, and they tell me their sites are only filled half during the summer. And thank you, Mr. Cole, for your article. Very good.
Oh, you mean my? I just made comments. It wasn't my article.
Okay, your comments.
Yeah.
Thank you. Okay. Mr. Clark mentioned Roman T. Palm was 3 feet deep at low tide. Really, it's 2 feet deep, because when I took that picture, I got stuck in my boat. So the reason it is unsafe for canoes is because boaters from dockside have to accelerate on low tide, have to accelerate from their lagoons with their boats, thereby creating large wakes. So how many canoes are going to be tipped over when our guys try to get out? Excuse me. The lady from Castaways, Ocean City, mentioned her park was similar to this project. Her park is located at least 5 miles from the main road, which is Route 611. Also, in the event of an evacuation, as I mentioned in planning and zoning, they have two routes out of the park. We have only one. This is Castaways. Councilman Phillips brought up about the three lagoons. I have been there 46 years, and I can remember them being dug for campsites. I believe these were done illegally and without a DNR permit. Are there still any restrictions on their use? Okay, President Vinson and other members of the County Council, thanks for listening to me, and I know you will do what you feel is in the best interest of the 10,000 people who reside on Long Neck Road. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Higgins.
Thank you, William.
Okay, it's my understanding that is the end of your organized presentation. Did any of the council have any questions of Ms. Mary Schreider Fox and any of her witnesses before we go on to any others?
I have one little comment. You got over 11,000 square feet for each person.
Okay. I didn't figure
according
that out.
According to the numbers you gave us.
Pardon?
Or according to the numbers.
Is that right? Okay. How is that? Is that?
You said 25 acres, and it's 43,560 feet in square in an acre. So you multiply it, you got to come out.
Okay. And Lawrence. <Arthur. laughs>
He's been figuring that out for a half hour.
He's a numbers man. Okay. He does numbers.
Yeah. Thank you. And at this point, we will open the. Up for others who may be here and would like to speak in opposition. I would point out, as we read the rules at the beginning, we do not want items repeated that were previously discussed. We have had testimony concerning flooding, economic impact, traffic, buffers, safety, and also safety in the water. Is there anyone else that would like to speak that was planning to add something new? You might see someone. If you come forward, please give us your name and address and sign in, please.
And this is what
good afternoon, Ms. Stever, gentlemen. My name is Betty Greenewalt. I live at 33378 Lakeshore Circle, Potnets Lakeside. I am the president of Potnets Lakeside Community Homeowners Group. My community is pretty well a full-time community with a 90% full-time occupancy. And 89% of us are seniors. We have very few children, but the school buses do come in. They come in April through the middle of June, and then suddenly those same school buses are picking up children along in our community to go to camp. So 7 months that this RV park is going to be open, school buses travel up and down Long Neck Road. Long Neck Road is very unique.
It's one lane down, one lane out. If you're coming from Banks Road, which is the cross section between Banks, Schoolhouse, and Longneck, if you're coming out and going down to Massey's Landing, you are turning into one lane. It's very hard if you have a large vehicle. That vehicle is not going to turn easy at what is County Bank, the Shanty Shack area there. It's going to have a tough turn. There is nothing on Longneck Road for youth. There's no mall, no rec center, no movie, no nothing. Kids need something to do, especially teenagers. Golf carts are the answer. They go across a state road from one side to the other, up and down a state road. None of Robert Tunnell III or Junior's communities are going to allow them to drive their golf carts around. Per Robert Tunnell III, Andy Strine and Jerry Heisler, who were all landowners of manufactured home communities, business is picking up. So why not use your old variance that you were granted and put in manufactured homes, especially in a community that would have some amenities? Massey's Landing has no pool, no paved roads, no street lights, and no signs. If you live along Longneck Road, you know one thing. Emergency vehicles on weekends go up and down and down and up and up and down, and the sirens are wailing all the time. If they can't get to a community soon enough, you're going to have deaths. Many of the communities along Longneck Road have applied for automatic defibrillators so that our security can start giving health emergency care to our seniors. I think this is a bad idea. These are our homes. Yes, they lose value. And right now, if homes are selling, our value isn't becoming so bad. But please remember, we are taxpayers, and we are voters. And you cannot treat us this way. These are our homes, whether you consider them dwellings or not. It is important that we have some kind of stability on Longneck Road. Now, I'd like to talk about a couple of other things here. Their lawyer has said it's good for the economy. Well, if they don't leave the campgrounds per Kathy Walsh, then how's it good for the economy? RVs bring an extra car with them because very often Dad goes home for the week. So Mom needs some form of transportation. An RV is not going to unhook, rehook all their things to go. Yes, a bus would be nice, but is it leaving at the time I'm leaving? If you haven't gone down Longneck Road in a year or so, go down on a Friday afternoon. The other day I tried to get out on a Friday afternoon. My mistake. I went out the main gate. It took me 35 minutes to get onto Longneck Road. Lakeside is lucky. We have a back gate. Our back gate closes. We are hammering Robert Tunnell to put in a key card gate because that is going to be the only way we are going to keep out RVs, because once they get in, they don't know how to get out. And they ride around and around and around like Short Circle, and they can't find their way out. There are too many inconsistencies with this plan that you've heard today. Please do not grant this campground. Thank you.
Thank you.
Oh, I have one more thing I'd like to say. If you do, I demand that every camper have one of these from Delaware Co-op. Because if they don't, everybody's electric rates are going to go up because Delaware Co-op is going to be buying electricity from everybody. This is beat the peak. When the red yellow light goes on, you know to power down. And when the red light goes on, you say, let's go out for dinner.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Thank you. Is there anyone else that has something new to add?
Come on down.
Come up here. There's a guy behind the post there. Everett, you see him. Go over here. Well, here, no. Ladies, beat you to it, sir. You're next. Stay right there.
Sorry, that's all right. Now.
Like the fellow going to get in the pool, eh? What was the name of that pool? I forgot the name of that pool. I didn't want to get in the pool that time. He sat there for years and Christ came on him.
Hello. My name is Mary Hecker, and I am the president of the Massey's Landing Homeowners Association. I have a residence in Massey's Landing, and I also live in Smyrna, Delaware. I actually have a couple comments and a couple questions, and I wanted to know if the council could help us clear some things up. We've been going through this since January, and Mr. Fuquay and Mr. Clark and Mr. Fawcett have commented during this time that this plan that they've presented is the plan in its entirety. As you've heard, the original plan was for 575 RV spots, and they've since changed that. It's 332 with the tents. But I would like to use Mr. Clark's map, and maybe all of you could help me answer some questions. Right here, this is our park, as you're aware. This is where they're proposing the campground on this side and this side. And this green line right here represents Miss Ida Fawcett's property. Now, there's been no mention of this because we keep hearing that this plan is in its entirety. There won't be anything else yet. This right here, this tax parcel number, is on every piece of paperwork they talked about today. If I'm not mistaken, Mr. Moore, this tax ID number was read out loud. This, everything that was advertised is about this tax parcel number as well. If nothing is happening, if this is it, if there are nothing, no other plans, why is this property being rezoned? Why are we asking for a conditional use with campground if we're not using it? My other question is, and maybe you can help me answer it, I don't know. I'm curious as to how that happened, but Miss Ida's property is still included, but it's not going to be used. And again, I'm concerned about one phase, one time construction. The other issue is that this is one parcel number, this is one parcel number, and all of this right here is one parcel number. They're asking for conditional use on this part right here where it's all wooded. We talked about how they're going to thin out the trees. If you grant them conditional use to put a campground on this spot, which will be 50 feet from all these homes, what happens to these homes? Can these campers, if they choose to have an amenity in this mobile home park, are they allowed to use that amenity? Are they allowed to encroach upon Massey's Landing Manufactured Home Park for an amenity, even if it's not included? Even this tax parcel number is in your plan because we're one. But are they allowed to have amenities in our park? Does that mean that we are going to be subjected to the RVers and their golf carts and their boats and all of those other things? And I don't think that's been answered either in planning and zoning or here. And I don't know if you can answer that for us right now.
Mr. Lang, can you address the issue of the tax map parcel numbers?
Bear with me a second.
We'll do that, sir.
Parcel 31 is the southern side, according to the map I've got in front of me, is the southern side of Long Neck Road. Parcel 31.02 is the northern side, the majority of the northern side, approximately 53 acres. And then 31.02 is the site. Oh, I said 31, so excuse me. 31.04 is the site
where the homes,
where the home site is.
Right. Mm-hmm. So it is included, I guess. Is that?
Now, if you look at this, that's the port of the, a part of that parcel is, but there's a realignment of the property line for that site, so you can see it on that drawing.
So this application does not include, in your opinion, and Everett, in your opinion, does not include the home site, as they keep referring to it, the 5 acres. Is that, somebody want to address that? Is that, Mr. President, do you want to?
Sure, I'll just jump right up there.
But we jump out of order here and let them
we'll
clear it up.
The plan is shown here, shows the perimeter of the park.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? This is Mrs. Fawcett's property here. This is the
Noble Home Park, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Jeff, can you explain the dimensions of the boundaries? Well, there is a piece of Mrs. Fawcett's property in the campground. You nip the corner of it. There's a survey. It's the first map exhibit in your larger book. So that's why her parcel number is used, because a piece of her property is involved, and there's also an easement on her property for buffer.
And that would be just part of her parcel, and that's why that was included.
Correct. And the legal description of this application is found in the first chapter of your book along with this plan, and it describes this shape that's rendered on the plan. The tax parcel number for the park includes the entire park, everything on the south side along the road. The part of the application is only what you see rendered in green on this plan. So she's right. There are three separate tax parcels. We're involving one tax parcel in its entirety, two other ones in part.
Yes, but there is a meets and bounds description showing this as one of the exhibits that was included with your application.
Okay. Does that answer that question for you?
It answers that question, yes. Now, again, what about the use of that, since it's considered, the entire tax parcel is considered in the application?
No, the entire tax parcel is not considered. It's only that portion with the meets and bounds that were included there.
Everett, she asked this question, and where the mobile homes are, that's not now included, which is still owned by the same family. It's all on leased ground, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if there are any amenities. Are there any amenities in that part of the mobile home part that's now been excluded? Is there any amenity other than the canal?
No, sir. Not that I'm aware of.
So would there be any reason for people to come into?
There would not be, but I wanted to question as to whether if there were any proposed amenities. Well,
that would be up to the owners of the property, which you all lease from.
Correct.
So there could be an arrangement that we're not aware of, and we wouldn't be party to that.
So if they proposed a marina on our side that would be used for the campground, then the campers would be permitted. It wouldn't be outlawed by you is what I'm asking. Because they own that also, they would be permitted to enter.
It's private property. If they'd be able to do whatever they can get permits for, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Mr. Lank, wouldn't that take a separate application if they were proposing a marina?
Because we're not conditional use.
Back in.
Wouldn't that take another application if they were proposing a marina? And I believe that was her specific question.
Right. The only thing we're considering right now is the application before us. It would be a separate application to use it for some other purpose mm-hmm. on another site.
Yeah, I didn't hear marina in there. Docs, I didn't hear that.
Okay.
So it is specifically just this outline portion, mm-hmm. which
Thank
does
you.
Include a small part of two of the tax map numbers, one of them in its entirety.
Okay. Thank you very much for that. Was an important question. In addition, I have been listening to the archaeological finds, and so now that we know that some has been found on Mrs. Fawcett's property, it's our understanding that even though her tax parcel number is included, she's not really a part of the plan, just a portion of
just
it.
Just that small portion.
Okay. In addition, Mr. Fuqua and Mr. Clark mentioned that there would be no outside storage allowed on this property for the proposed RV campground. We have 38 park models. Where's the storage going to be?
They were going to be left on site but moved to higher ground.
Okay, so technically there is going to be storage on the property. Okay. So the 38 park models will be left there and in all conditions.
Everything else would have to leave.
Right.
Everything else, okay.
They've proposed it.
All right.
Where is the higher ground?
Greenwood.
Mrs. Fawcett.
Okay. And one final thing I would like to mention. We've been talking about this 400-foot dwelling rule and how it doesn't pertain to us because we don't own dwellings. But in the front of Potnet's dockside, if you drive down Long Neck Road, there is a legal dwelling. Yes, there are manufactured homes in there. This is owned by Mr. Tunnel. He's not a faucet, so it's definitely owned by someone else. I have gone out and measured because I'm not aware of all of your rules. It may be wise to have someone else go measure 400 feet from this dwelling because it certainly will go into the proposed area of the RV park.
There are some dwellings, is what I understand.
We yes. already have that picture. Yeah.
Thank you. I wasn't sure that you had it. Already. Okay. And that's all I have to say. Thank you very much.
Thank you. There was a gentleman who had started coming up towards the front, I believe.
Sign in, please.
Hello, early good evening. My name is Lewis Newman. I live in Massey's Landing. I am 70 plus years old. I've made a short paper that I hope you can bear with me. I'll go through as quickly as I can.
Take your time.
These are my main concerns. Emergency medical rescue time will be affected by the added traffic, which has proven will be generated. In my case, this is an extreme importance. I have used the medical rescue services 4 times in the past 3 years. The older lady said that she wanted to get defibrillators in her park. I have one inside me. I had a heart attack and I was hit 3 times with the paddles. If that ambulance had been delayed 30 seconds, I wouldn't be here telling you this. Now, you heard about the intersection of 24 and 5. It's extremely miserable. You have a shopping center that's going to be built, or they're working on right now. I believe it's going to house a drugstore and a convenience store, just to add to the traffic. You heard of Banks Road and Long Neck Road. An RV cannot come off of Banks Road and turn on it. The road is not sufficient for that. The road is not sufficient coming off a school lane to turn a 35 or 40 foot vehicle. It just cannot happen without somebody backing up or being hit. My biggest problem is my home. I had it appraised last year. I was going to sell it this year. I had it appraised for approximately $168,000. I've talked to a few people, a few friends of mine. My daughter, she retired from real estate. She said, Dad, you might get $20,000 because this is all up in the air. No one is going to buy my home with all this on proposals. And if would someone want to buy my house with 300 RVs across the street? I wouldn't want to buy a house with 300 RVs across the street. My intention of selling a home was to move north to a retirement community and be near Christiana Hospital and my family. This obviously is not going to happen. Another thing that concerns me is home invasion. we are going to have 300 sites. And if we fill each one of them sites up with four people, we have 1,200 people. Now, out of that 1,200 people, are a few of them going to be irresponsible? Are a few of them going to be drunk? Are a few of them going to be racing around roads on their golf carts? Are they going to be littering our park? Or littering the landing? And it's, who's going to control this? There is none. Right now, on a Saturday evening at my park, I can sit on my deck, and at 1 o'clock in the morning, I can hear cars, squealing wheels, racing up Long Neck Road. And if anybody doubts me, you're more than welcome to come down on a weekend, and you can witness this firsthand. You've heard a lot of testimony. You've seen charts. You've seen graphs. You've seen pictures. But you haven't seen the real problem. Only the residents on Long Neck Road, and especially Massey's Landing, can truly express the problems that this will create. And the only way you can do that is with your own eyes. If you come down on a Saturday afternoon and sit at the intersection of 24 and Long Neck Road for about 15, 20 minutes, and then you'll come down and you'll get down the banks of School Road and you'll sit there for a little while. And when you're traveling down there, take a look at the shoulders on that road. They're non-existent. It's all commercials. When you go past several of the entrances to the RV park, to the mobile park, they have created turn lanes. When they create the turn lane, where's the shoulder? There is none. When you go past the development of condominiums at Fairfield, where's the turning lane? Where's the shoulder? It's gone. They use it for turning lane to get into Fairfield. What's coming out of there, next to Fairfield? If I'm not mistaken, there's a boat storage yard right there. These people going down there and renting RV lots with a car behind them or a truck, they can store their boat right there. They can go up, park their RV, go up to Caswell's boat storage and pull out of there with a boat or a trailer. And no more than 100 feet down the road, there is no shoulder. So where does a bicycle, someone riding a bicycle go? Where does someone walking their dog? What happens to these people going up and down the road on golf carts? Last night, I saw four of them out on Long Neck Road after 10 o'clock. No lights. How unsafe is that? Just the entire Long Neck area is, as we've heard, pretty much retirement communities. There are RV sites in several parks on Long Neck Road. As far as I know, one park has been granted sites and has not been developed them yet. Why? Because they don't have the need. Do we want them on Long Neck Road? No, I do not. Does anybody here want them on Long Neck Road? No. But I'm speaking from my heart what this will do to someone in my position. That's all I have to say. Thank you.
Sir, thank you,
Mr. Newman.
Can I ask you a question, please? Yes. I missed your name when you started your testimony.
Lewis Newman.
You
give us
your
Lewis
name?
Newman.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I live at 37251 Jasper View Lane.
Okay. Is there anyone else that has something new to add? I see a hand up. We've had testimony concerning traffic, flooding, economic impact, buffers, safety, school issues.
Something new. Come on now.
Well, just anything. I'm stopping from speaking.
I know what you're saying, but you'd be good. If Kramer was here, he'd get on you.
My name's Denny Kaufman, and I'm from Lewis. Just looked at my phone a few minutes ago to see if it was time to go pay the meters. Big flash up there said flood for this area at 8, up to 8 p.m. If the tides are right and the winds are right, these people are going to have a hard time getting home tonight because they're going to be flooded. 2 weeks ago, I was down Massey's fishing, and I seen two big Army trucks pull up. I mean, the ones that carry troops. Three Army guys, two Army guys and a woman come down there. And they said, do you live in this area? I said, kind of. They said, well, we're down here to assassinate the evacuation of people. I said, well, talk to this gentleman right here because he lives right down here. And they wanted to know how they could do better to evacuate people from that area, how the water came up, where it stays in this area. So even the Army is concerned about the floods and getting people out in this area. And that's why they brought these big trucks down to see how they could travel the roads and get up and down the roads and so on. So that's they're concerned about. Secondly, we haven't talked about the people that live down here and use Massey's. I use Massey's every day. I do have bad knees, and Massey's is probably the only saltwater handicap pier around that you can get out of a car and walk 20 feet and fish. They only have 20 parking places. If 5% of these people come down, that's 50 people. They'll wipe out the parking places for the locals. I mean, Delaware people come here for the taxes, the beach, and the fishing. We can't take that away from them. I mean, we just can't take the fishing away from the people who go there. I started a club this last year down there called the Massey's Toggers. And it's men and women who local here at fish, and our theme is let a child catch a fish, and we like to catch fish and let a child reel in and hold it up. The parents take a picture of it, and there's nothing more exciting than to see a child pull fish up for the first time. And if this park goes in, I will not be able to do that because I won't be able to find a place to park there. And it's just, you know, it's just a shame to take away from the locals. There's nothing, they said right here, that this park is strictly for the park. I couldn't go over and get a sandwich. I couldn't go over and get a soda. I couldn't bring my grandchildren down to go through their nature park. It's strictly for them. So they're taking everything away from the locals in this area, down that area, down Long Neck. And it's not fair, you know. That's our place. You know, that's where we go. It's where my friends meet, where we meet each other, and we have fun and fish. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else that has something else new to add? Do you have something new to add?
Do you suppose I could tell him something while they're coming up here?
No.
Hello, my name is Pat Rice. I live at 33346 Lakeshore Circle, Putnets, Lakeside. And we do have an alert, by the way. My question for you, when you consider the word dwelling, I live in a manufactured home. If I don't live in a home and I don't live in a dwelling, am I homeless? Does that mean that I can get assistance? Do I have to pay my property taxes?
You have to call Obama. This is the wrong place to ask that question.
I know it's in the code, and perhaps when you're considering all of this, this is something that may have an impact. Yeah. So I want to say thank you.
Thank you very much.
Okay, is there anyone else that has something to add?
Come right on down.
Okay.
Ditto Marks, because that was my wife. She has a different point of view. You know how those things are. So a couple of things I'm saying. Thank God my engineering degree paid off, because, as you said, 300 is bigger than 100. That's a bigger number. These trailers are big. They're long. They take a lot of room coming down. I've RV'd. You have a separate car. We've been through that. And my development at Lakeside, before you could come in, any of us, you have to go through a security check, a police check. That's why I use a different name. But no, they made sure that you were a viable candidate to live there. These people aren't living there. They're coming and going. We have no control whatsoever. The other thing is, I'm practicing after that. I went through the law school here in Delaware. And I graduated, and I practiced law, and I worked my last 25 years for the U.S. Small Business Administration. I worked in contract law, and I advise many, many small businesses, try to do the right thing to help yourselves and get them started, whatever it would take. One, this particular applicant did apply for something, and they saw the economics change, and they changed their plan. And that's viable. That's good. At the same time, you sit there and say, again, I switched back to my engineering degree and said, wait a minute, year-round money versus summer money only, how is that going to make the family permanent forever? Is this organization going to guarantee that this family will get money every single season, every week? That's one thing. Second, Ocean City, she was in Ocean City. That's great. That's a known resort. I'm from Ursley, New York, and Philly, and that's a known place. Rehoboth is kind of known, but not Long Neck. Shh, we want to keep that quiet. It's a great place, but is that going to really attract RVers? Jersey's coming back now. They came here this season because it was flooded in a bad way, but now it's back. And right now, like I said, we'll try to get home because we did get an alert till 8:15 tonight. Flood warning. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Is there anyone else? Is there anyone else that would like to speak on an issue?
There's a guy coming down. Will you come right next behind him, sir?
Hey, come on down, sir.
Yeah, line up there a little bit if you want.
You can head right behind him so you'll be right ready to go.
This is like The Price is Right. We want to get you down here.
Yeah, we really don't want to keep you at 8:15 so you can get back home.
We're going to call in pizza in a few minutes. We'll bring out the cots.
County Council, my name is Emil Shepherd. I'm a member of Massey's Landing Community. I'm also a member of their Homeowners Association. I've been a resident there since 1963 when my parents bought property. I've been a full-time resident there for 33 years. I moved down from Wilmington, took a job in Seaford, and worked there for that period of time. I grew up with a Fawcett family. We played together. We went fishing, crabbing, clamming together. Ida, she's like a second mother to me. She took me when she took her kids. She took me to, in the fall, when she took her kids to go shopping for school, she took me. She fed me. She looked after me. Because of my relationship with the family, it's very difficult for me to stand up here today and voice my opinion, my opposition to this plan. But after being a member of this community for most of my life, I feel like I got to speak out against the plan that affects my community and the surrounding communities. I found out about the plan back in January when I saw the document Linford filed with the Preliminary Land Use Service, where 575 RV sites were proposed. This plan eliminated his mother's home, property, his sister and brother, and the community, Massey's Landing, of nearly 100 homes. So I called my friend Linford up and I asked him, I said I saw this plan, and I asked him if I was going to be put out. His answer was not right away, but yes, you will. So the members of our community got together, and we asked for a meeting with the family. We finally got one after a while, but it was more with Mr. Clark and Mr. Fuquay. And at that time, they said they were going to change the plan to reduce it to 322 sites, what they've talked about today. And Mr. Fuqua, or Mr. Clark said today that it was not a phased plan. It was just going to be one thing going into 322. But in his response on the plus review, it says a master land use conceptual site plan encompassing the entire Fawcett family property was submitted to for plus agency review and comment. It says the initial development phase of the Fawcett land will not include the 6-acre home place property of the existing manufacturer home rental known as Massey's Landing Park, situated in the south side of Long Neck Road. There is no schedule to develop either one of these tracts of land at this time. Well, it's that kind of wording, phase, and at this time, is why there's so many people in this room. They feel that if this goes through, it's only a matter of time before it takes over the park. And Massey's Landing has probably been there, it goes way back, 60-some years probably, maybe farther than that. Then in 1976, they expanded it, dug the lagoons, the ones you see here, the one that I live on, which I bulkheaded. I put the first bulkhead on it, that canal. And because I wanted to protect the property, it's not my property, but it needed to be protected. So I spent my money, put the bulkhead on. And then about 5 years later, it deteriorated. I put on another one, thinking that I'm 60 years old. I thought I was going to retire there. That's where I was going to finish out my life. So I was willing to spend that money to protect that property. You know, you look at these communities, they're not something that you grow tired of and move on and change and do something else. There's people's lives here. There's people that have retired. They've spent their life savings. They got everything invested. If something like this moves through, these people have nowhere to go. And that's why there's so many people here today, because most of these people are Massey's Landing residents. They're nervous. They're worried about the traffic, and they're worried about a lot of things, but they're worried about losing their home also. That's what's bringing them out. And thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Was there someone right behind you?
Down there.
Where am I to sign?
There's a paper on the desk there, right there. It should be.
Maybe he took it with him.
Oh, wait a minute. He might have a paper with him.
I bet he wrapped it up. Yep, he stole the sign.
Can I use another one?
That's okay.
He's coming back.
He doesn't have a ring, does he?
He can't take a ring. Underneath that piece of paper, you got the sign-in sheet there with you.
Oh, and
did you sign this?
I signed it.
Did you sign this?
I signed the one.
Where? You took it with you, I think. But
I did. Oh, I'm sorry. God, thanks.
Yeah.
Keep an eye on that man. Mm-hmm. Hold your wallets.
He said he's over 62, so I believe.
For the last speaker, you didn't want to do that.
Compliment.
I've signed in.
Yes, we need your name and address now.
My name is Jim Gervin. I'm a resident of Creek's End, which is off Long Neck Road. And I'm very pleased to have a chance to speak to you, even though I hope I will be the last speaker of the evening. We've all set plenty of time, and so have you. Yours are more comfortable chairs than ours, but that's fine.
Thank goodness.
Designed that way.
I know they are.
The guy did last you some way.
I would like to make one brief comment to begin with to Mr. Fawcett. Mr. Fawcett, I've been here a long time. I'm one of the older people who might be in the room. I came in 1957, drove down Long Neck Road, and it was never concrete, ever concrete.
Be sure to talk in the microphone.
It was never concrete.
Okay.
I'm sorry, but it was.
Well, if it was concrete, then they put the clamshells over it, ma'am.
Yes, sir. You really need to talk to the council.
Yeah, they may have put the clamshells over the concrete road. I'll bear witness to that, but I know that times I was here. Beyond that, I believe that there are many of you who may have used Manx Road at one time or another and have had an opportunity to observe one of the most beautiful old trees around here that unfortunately was cut down. And it makes me think, and my wife think, of the anthropological and archaeological importance of the land that you're now considering to do something with. The Fawcett family have had it a long time. The learned Mr. Fuqua and his colleagues have indicated that archaeological things may probably not be found except for high ground. I've done a number of digs, and I can tell you, I really hope you will give serious consideration to that part of our history, our human history, that's there on that piece of property, although someone has said, perhaps it's not there. If one wants to think about that low ground where the reeds are as you come through Massey's Ditch on a boat, it wasn't always low, it was higher. And that high ground wasn't always there in that same location. And you know that our Nanticoke, Lenni Lenape, and other Indians of this community used the waterways a lot, and they lived and fished and worked those ways. So if you have it in your hearts to think about something other than the very, very seriously needs of our traffic control on Long Neck Road and the RV park, think also, please, of our heritage and the people who came before us. They're there. If you've never walked on a beach, Indian River, Rehoboth, and found an arrow point, then you missed a big thing in your life. Thank you very much for your time. Please think about our past.
Thank you, sir. Is there anyone else that desires to speak? Is there anyone else that desires to speak? Seeing none, Mr. President, we can close the public hearing on this matter.
We're still waiting
However,
for something.
We have had discussions. Yes?
Yeah, we're still waiting for something, aren't we?
The next part. We have had discussions on keeping the public record open for some specific issues. I know one I'd asked to council if they would give me a legal memo concerning some of the issues that they raised. And there was also the issue of the direction
the
or shall
the clarification on the
archaeological
the
stuff.
Historic
I'd like to have a new traffic impact study.
We will close the public comment.
Yes, the public record.
Public record.
Yes.
We will leave it open.
Excuse me. Public hearing. The public hearing is closed.
Yes.
Correct. We'll leave the comment period open for an answer from Mr. Izzo about the letter that Mr. Fuqua received about the issues that you referenced as far as your correspondence with the two attorneys on what they presented today as a legal memo.
Yes.
And what is the view of the council on asking for a current traffic impact study? That's a question. I mean, certainly we certainly have seen two different numbers out there that is somewhat, confusing, but anyway.
I think it would help not just this, but many, many things all in that area.
Is there any opposition to asking for a current impact study for the traffic?
Shouldn't that be a decision Delta
yes.
makes? I mean,
yeah.
Would you ask Delta if there should be additional info?
One of the things is it is in DLDOT's jurisdiction, and we ask them traditionally for comment, and that is done early on in the process. In this case, they said no, and they're the ones that have jurisdiction on that. So that, from the legal standpoint,
we do have the ability to ask.
You do have the ability
to
ask.
We do have the ability.
Mr. Vince, if I could clarify my point, if you have some questions about it, I think you should go back to DLDOT and say, here's what you said. You know, would there be any reason to do additional work? I don't mean that you already have the answer. I mean, if you want to, rather than order a new TIS, because I don't think the council has authority to do that. I mean, it really should be Delta.
One of the things we can do in keeping the record open is to get clarification on that concerning the traffic issues as well.
And we could still make a decision in the future to ask for a
just
traffic impact.
Just keep it open on the traffic issues.
As long as the record stays open, that's correct.
All right, good.
That'd be fine. Then if we get an indication we should, we can move forward on
so
that.
So we will present the different numbers we've had presented to us to DelDOT and ask them for their opinion.
Yes.
Okay.
And their attorney's going to give us something in writing, I believe.
They will be giving that to me for it.
Yes.
One other question, just some clarification. The memo was to address.
Just both attorneys had some initial comments concerning the issue concerning the AR1 and then the conditional use. And you raised some questions initially in your presentation. And then that was responded to. And just, you know, 2 or 3 page memo on that specifically what you asked.
Public comment.
Anything? Excuse me, sir?
I said I thought public comment was closed.
We can keep the record open for things we request.
Yes, the public hearing is.
The hearing is over, but we can keep things open. We have information we need to help us make a decision. That's the purpose of that.
So let's just leave the record open, and that gives us the ability to, if we hear something from some of this stuff, we could ask for a little bit more, right, at this point?
We can't.
Right?
On those issues only.
On those issues.
On those issues.
Traffic.
Only.
Traffic, archaeological.
And zoning. And it was the conditional use in the area?
That was just a memo to me.
Right.
For the purpose of, I'll make a presentation.
Second.
Was it the attorney, the lady, she was going to get the attorney for the, okay.
So we need a motion to defer.
I'll make the motion.
Motion, Mr. Wilson, second, Mrs. Deaver, to defer.
Okay. And is that on the change of zone? Because you need to do it on
the change
both.
Of zone first. That's the first thing on the thing was change of zone 1729. Any questions on that motion? We'll take that vote, Mrs. Deaver.
Yes, and thank
Mr. Cole.
Yes.
Mr. Phillips.
Yes.
Mr. Wilson.
Yes.
I vote yes, motion carried. Next thing, they need a motion to defer on conditional use 1963.
Give it to me in a week.
Motion, Mr. Phillips. Second, Mr. Wilson. Any question on that motion?
I'm going to put one.
Take the vote, Mrs. Deaver.
Yes.
Cole.
Yes.
Phillips.
Yes.
Mr. Wilson.
Yes.
Well, yes. Now it's time to the motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second.
Motion, Mr. Cole. Second, Mr. Phillips. Any question?
Hey, Jim.
Take the vote, Mrs. Deaver.
Yes.
Mr. Cole.
Yes.
Phillips.
Yes.
Mr. Wilson. I vote yes, motion carried. We're now adjourned.